Welcome to the next episode of Flint Co. Talks. It's your boy Dano. I'm here in Austin today. Have a couple of good guests for us today. I've got Mr. Rob and Mr. Craig. Welcome to Flint Co. Talks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you bet. How are y'all this morning?
Doing well. Got up, came here, made it. We're live. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, let's
get
do
to
it.
Come talk to you, Dano.
Let's do it.
Feeling refreshed. Got to Craig lent me a guest room last night and got 8 hours of sleep, so I'm ready to go.
Let's talk a little bit about each of you, who you are, who you work for, and let's learn a little bit about y'all before we get into our questions today. Rob, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I'm CEO of LCG Capital Management. We're based in St. Louis, Missouri. been in commercial real estate the last 25 years. Live in St. Louis, Missouri, have three wonderful children, grew up playing tennis for the fun of it. I do a lot of high rocks races, have my next one coming up in Chicago, so I'm pumped about that.
Very nice.
And I love what I do, so that's a little bit about myself.
Awesome. Craig?
So yeah, Craig Sauer. I am the COO of LCG Capital Management. Some of you may know me as the former CAO of Flintco. So changed roles here recently. Al Barisi recently made an investment in LCG Capital, and I came over to help scale the business and help Rob lead the way. I've been in real estate myself basically all my life with a little hiatus where I was going to become a construction executive for a little while. So came over to the Flintco side, grew up in the business in St. Louis. Rob actually used to work with me and my family when we had our real estate business in St. Louis. We ran into some troubles in 2008, worked our way through it. Rob and I went separate ways. I went into the construction world. Rob continued with the good fight in the real estate world. And a few years we got back together and started talking and led to this new opportunity that we're working on at LCG Capital. A little bit about myself, happily married, got two teenage girls, which is always a challenge, but they make it a lot of fun. A couple dogs, which we were talking about. They're my buddies, so we hang out a lot with the dogs. Like to travel, like to read a lot, cook, play a bit of golf when I can, and spend time with the family.
Gotta love it. Good family, man. Love to hear that. So at the end of June, the news kind of broke publicly that Al Barisi had made an investment in LCG. Let's talk a little bit about that and maybe why we chose LCG with other options out there.
Yeah, I'll get into the detail of that, and this is somewhat to expand what Craig was talking about. So there's a lesson in life. You never know what can happen. So I met Craig back in maybe 2005. So about 20 years ago.
Wow.
I was the young leader chair for Urban Land Institute.
Okay.
Going back away. Yeah. And we were actually at a lunch and learn and we were talking, and Craig's family's business, I would say, was the premier infill developer in St. Louis. Placemaking, was doing stuff for sure on the forefront of innovation when it came to development. I was somewhat enamored by his family's business. I was with another developer at the time. And then I actually went to Craig and asked for a job in 2006 and then joined his family's company in 07. As Craig said, tough times in 08 and 09, and we went separate ways. And we always stayed in contact with each other. And fast forwarding the story, and I always looked very highly of Craig's family and what they did on the development side. High quality, very ethical. Everything that they approached was very methodical at the same time. And it was just a great culture. So fast forward, I become president of another company, another development company, full service real estate company based in St. Louis. Craig is with Flint Co. Al Barisi. And we reconnect. I'm driving in Northwest Arkansas, 2018. We're doing work for a client there on site selection. And I see all the Flint Co. signs around. Mm-hmm. I made an impromptu, I forget if it was a text or a call, and I'm like, what's up with all these signs here in Northwest Arkansas? And he's like, we do a lot of work here. And I go, well, I'm here all the time too, and I love it. And so basically from 2018, 19, call it a slow burn up until this point you talked about, how did we get here? Craig and I started talking. We started talking more. I decided to leave the company I was at as president back in May of 2024. Mm-hmm. Craig and I continue to talk, and this comes down to the foundation of we trust each other. Then we had several like kind people that I'd say connected us as well, and then became, I'd say, proponents of Alberici buying into LCG back in June of 25. So that's somewhat the story of how we got there. And I would say if it wasn't through relationships, friendships, trust, we would have never gotten to this point of Alberici buying into LCG. I'll turn it over to Craig if anything else to add to the story. But
yeah, you asked, you know, this compared to a couple other potential opportunities. There was a few things that made this one really interesting. I want to first start off with, it's been an objective of Alberici to be able to expand our client offerings. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do that more on the forefront with the real estate, to be able to get out and help our clients when they're having difficulties with a project. We wanted to be able to provide additional capabilities beyond just coming in and constructing it. We wanted to provide services for them for whether it's site selection or development or, you know, brokerage or management, whatever it may be. We have a lot of clients out there doing a lot of really good things, but sometimes they get stuck in situations and they don't know how to get themselves out of. So it's been Alberici's desire to get in this business for a while. We started off with Wildbase Real Estate Investments, which was more of a investment platform on the development side. It allowed us to provide capital to some of our clients and help align our interest in various ways. Early on that, we started that in 2020. Mm-hmm. Early on in that process, it was kind of, the thought was going to be a crawl, walk, run model, and this was the crawl model of getting us actively invested. We were trying to be very opportunistic. We weren't being very picky because we didn't have a lot of, you know, people didn't know us at the time. So the first concept was to get out, start talking to people, looking at people we trust, and furthering the interest. The next step was always to get into more active full service on the real estate side. We were working with, you know, the leadership of Alberici and Flinko, trying to figure out the best way to approach it. You know, real estate's a very entrepreneurial business. And in my mind, to be able to be effective in it, you need to maintain that entrepreneurial spirit. To me, it doesn't work as well when you just bring someone in-house and pay them a salary to try to be creative and unique and so I was struggling with a little bit on how we structure this and how it makes sense for both sticking with the values of the enterprise of Alberici, as well as keeping that entrepreneurial spirit. So that, trying to figure out what that balance would look like. So when Rob left his past company and had this thought of maybe we could do something together, you know, it all kind of clicked into place. Alberici is an owner in LCG, but LCG is also an advisor and has board seats to provide direction, but it's LCG is also its own entity. So we could still be nimble. We could still go out there, be entrepreneurial. Rob still has ownership in it. So the whole thing kind of really came together of being able to have the resources and the client base of Alberici while maintaining some semblance of autonomy. So I think everything together just really kind of slid in place between those elements.
Yeah, it seems like this, it's been kind of a long process. Like if you talk about a friendship from 20 years ago and conversations along the way, it really goes to show that, you know, creating the relationships, you never know where they're going to lead. You kind of alluded to that, Rob, and I love that. I love that you were at a ULI event as well. That's something we're extremely involved in. And anybody that's listening, go to the events, check them out. But Rob, for you, maintaining the entrepreneurial spirit, how has it been like being associated with Alberici? Like you feel like you're still running and gunning and nobody's holding you back and you're doing exactly what Craig's talking about?
Yeah, I for sure do best running and gunning. So usually foot's on the pedal and usually have to have tell people to put on the brake for me. So it's been great. We've been given extreme autonomy to do what we do best, service clients, look at strategic ways to help our clients. Mm-hmm. And we've had full support from Alberisi to go do that. For me personally, this partnership came down to somewhat on the personal side. Mm-hmm. How can I continue to grow in the real estate industry and be partnered with a fantastic partner reputationally, what their clients think about them, the scale that they have across, you know, the US, the world. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, it was like the next chapter for me is how do I grow and then use a business and have a business partnership to go leverage that growth. And that partnership has allowed LCG already in the last couple months scale in a very thoughtful way, which we wouldn't have been able to do without the partnership. So it's been fantastic. And then with that, we've been able to keep the entrepreneurial spirit of being really nimble with our clients, hire the right people, look at things directionally focused on, you know, long-term strategy for LCG on how that growth happens at the same time. So the partnership's been great.
Love to hear that.
Yeah, we complement each other well with our strengths.
Sure.
Some of things that Rob didn't have was, you know, the national exposure to these clients. The things that we didn't have was we had some real estate expertise, but not on the scale that Rob's been actively doing it. And just being able to put that together and, you know, meshing our clients at Alberisi and Flinko with LCG's core capabilities was just really an excellent match for both of us.
Let's talk a little bit about those core capabilities and maybe what LCG specializes in. Let's dig into that a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things that we've found beneficial to our clients is not just having one or two or three offerings. Mm-hmm. It's a full suite of real estate services for them. Mostly the best way to describe LCG is a strategic partner, full service commercial real estate, to our clients. And that could be an outsourced real estate department for them. Like, let's say it's the CFO who needs help on decision-making when it comes to real estate, to property management services, to corporate services, to site selection and brokerage. We offer specific niche development services as well. So a full suite of services, all encompassing of commercial real estate. So one of the best ways to look at it is we have a very large menu, mm-hmm. just like if you go to a restaurant and you have things to choose from, and the end users are able to look at those things that we offer, while at the same time they can choose all of them, right? They can choose one of them, but at the end of the day, it also gives them a one-stop shop that they don't have to go look for those services themselves, you know, in the equivalent of the yellow pages and whatnot, and we already have the built-in trust, right? Last thing I want to add, one of the pillars of LCG is that we look at best in class talent, which I think flows into and does flow into Alberisi at the same time. So all of our employees, who we hire, we want to make sure our clients are getting that best in class. And we've been very intentional and deliberate in who we've been hiring for all those services that I just told you about as well.
Yeah, that's definitely something that Alberisi does. If you've gone back and watched the podcast we've done with John Alberisi or Greg Kozik, they talk about being fanatical and hiring the right people for the right reason. And when you get the people and you provide the opportunity, the people just take care of the business for you, right?
Yeah.
That's great. So
it's miraculous. Yeah.
it really is. When you mentioned corporate services, tell me like a little bit about that. That's something that was a new term when we were talking yesterday and I was trying to understand what that was. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we found, especially in recent years, a lot of corporations are having difficulties either keeping up with their real estate services, either through expansions, branch locations, facility management, even is something as simple as procurement of their furniture, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just being inundated. So we've essentially have a service that provides outsourced real estate services for companies I'll do a for instance. There's a company based in St. Louis, Missouri. They're a large security company. They have 150 locations nationwide. They're all across the world. Mm-hmm. We started to develop a relationship with the CFO. They had in-house services that they were doing this, and they weren't necessarily keeping up with their renewals. They weren't keeping up with their construction. There were several things that were falling behind. We offered this service to them, and again, according to the CFO, not to put words in her mouth, she said it's the best decision she's ever made. So they've parlayed that service to us, and we're handling, we work in tandem with the CFO there, and we're essentially their outsourced real estate department. We give them, there's several reasons why people do it. Gives them redundancy. It gives them talent that they couldn't necessarily hire in-house. It allows them to be more nimble and stay in front of things. So it's a key service. It's most likely our greatest, I'd say, vertical right now from an expansion perspective, mm-hmm. is providing these real estate services to either, you know, companies, institutions, all the above, that they can lean on us for this support.
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, real estate becomes a huge expense for corporations, but it's not their core competency. Mm-hmm. So they get in that, they start expanding because they have needs to use the real estate, whether it's an industrial property and needs a distribution area, or if it's a retail facility and needs extra doors. They just start growing and using this real estate, but they don't have the core competency in being able to manage it always. And then, so it's always kind of a side issue that just causes them headaches. And a lot of times that flows up through the CFO and they just end up, you know, yeah, whatever, not checking it, not, you know, not doing their normal diligence that they do on 95% of the other work that they're doing. And it just kind of gets left behind and they get themselves in some interesting and non-strategic positions. So this allows us to come in with, you know, a lot of times a fresh set of eyes, look at their portfolio, you know, provide them a system for being able to track various aspects of the real estate and metrics. We can create dashboards for them. They'll know when lease renewal's coming up, what the lease terms look like, where they need to be. We could sit down and work with them. Oh, you have these five different centers here. Did you think about if you consolidate these into two centers on these two locations, what would that look like? You know, the shipping time between where your projects are and everything else, is there major savings there? Is there efficiency? So these are some of the questions that we can come in and work with our clients to help find solutions for them so that the real estate's working positively for them and not a hindrance to what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a typical core competency of even a construction company, right? So I love the thought of that. That's something else we can offer. You mentioned property management also. Like, how do we even begin to do that, right? That's something that me as a guy that's a builder has never had to deal with. I guess that's going to add a great opportunity for owners as well.
Yeah, sure. In some ways, it's considered a necessary evil. Just like accounting or other functions you just have to do, right? So we love property management. We think it's actually one of the most important things you need to be thinking about when you're looking at your buildings, right? So much of, I call it your upfront costs, go into either building, renovating, buying your buildings, and property management, for better or worse, tends to be an afterthought for a lot of customers, users. Mm-hmm. But actually, once you start living and breathing in the building, it becomes the most important thing. You might have your employees that complain, your operating expenses might be out of whack. Just how generally does the management of the building flow into the image that you're trying to portray to your customers, right? That could be retail customers. That could be corporate HQ offices. So one of the pillars that is near and dear to my heart for sure is property management. I think it's just a reflection of who you are as a company and how you maintain your buildings, while at the same time, especially these days, operating costs have been, you know, through inflation or whatnot, operating costs these days are just out of whack. And that could be taxes, insurance, your janitorial contracts, security contracts. I mean, I can run through the litany of lists. Having someone that's on your side and managing those expenses is a huge deal these days. Huge deal. So we take a ton of pride in property management and our partners looking out for their costs. Also, when you think about building construction, property management's such a big deal on the front end, and it's mostly overlooked. And that could be everything. Where do you put that mop sink closet? Where do you put storage that we can actually supply things? Making it sure the building after the fact, 5 to 10 years later, can be managed in a thoughtful way that doesn't cause a pain for either your in-house facilities, your property management team. So getting back to where we're talking is, this goes back to strategy and a holistic approach, is where we're beneficial on the property management side is providing that resource to these clients that they have it. And we think it's just a huge, it's a big deal. And it's just something that's really overlooked at times as a secondary thought, where it's like, hey, we'll just throw this labor at it. We'll just pay the bills. And then again, it's just, and then 5 years later, like, why is this thing breaking? Or, you know, why is this cost out of whack? So we think it's a huge deal as part of our business.
Yeah, as Rob was saying, you know, a lot of, you know, people spend so much money putting these buildings in place, and then we hand over the keys as a construction company, and they're like, now what?
Yeah.
You know, these are living, breathing buildings that need time and attention spent to them. And if you, you know, the earlier you get someone like LCG in, the more thought you can put in the process, and you can look at life cycle cost and make some decisions not based on what the capital is up front, but what it's going to be over the life cycle of that building, to make some more informed, smarter decisions rather than I'm just going to pick this floor here. Well, you know, what kind of cleaner to use on that floor, and what does that do when you're cleaning it? How long does it last? You know, we've gotten situations where we've had owners that almost didn't want the building because they didn't know what to do. Like from a Flinco standpoint, we turn the building over and they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Why
are y'all leaving?
And these buildings get more and more complicated.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more that goes into them.
The biggest feedback we get from our property managers after a building's turned over to them, or maybe they're assuming a current building, is why? It's why did they do this? This makes no sense because we can't even maintain it afterwards. So again, if we can get on the front end, we think it's a huge benefit to our clients.
Yeah. I think of a project I did many years ago, and we were all super excited about it. We're doing the final punch list walk, and there's all these end users that are invited to the space, and we walk through the whole area, and everybody's really excited about it, and everybody's high-fiving, and all of a sudden, like, the maintenance staff comes over and they say, hey, is there a place we're going to store the toilet paper? Or where are we going to store the, you know, whatever, the mops and the cleaning? And, you know, we're all kind of standing there, like, looking around, like, okay, who wants this one? Mr. Owner, I mean, you approved the final design. Like, did you talk to them before we, you know? And here we are. We have this great new facility, and some of the people that are going to be utilizing it are upset from day one. So I also think about, like, buying a house the first time. You don't know what it takes to manage a house until you've bought a house, right? People can tell you till they're blue in the face, but, you know, one day you open your air return and you're like, wow, that's a big gray nasty filter. How often should I be changing that? So
you learn the hard way, right?
Yeah, sometimes you have to. You have to. So when you think about property management, can you tell me, like, what type of properties that we'd be looking, that we would take under the umbrella for that?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say what we specialize in, no doubt, is more complex projects.
Okay.
Especially on the property management side. So corporate HQs, projects that have a lot of mixed use component to them. There might be retail there. There might be HQ office. You know, things with complicated REAs or easements involved. So we like complexity, placemaking type projects. One of our niches, no doubt, is medical and life science. That's one of the verticals that we have that's increasing at a rapid rate. So those are some of the buildings that we do. Well, most likely, I hate saying never say never, but no doubt, like, don't call us on self-storage. Yeah. That's something we don't do these days. There are some verticals that I would say we're not the most apt to take on. But for sure, those are from a property management side. That's for sure what we specialize in.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about what markets are we in? Like, when you think about where Alberisi works, where Flintco works, where is LCG?
Geographically?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what we are able to do is we're able to be a one-stop shop and follow our clients to whatever market they work in. So a lot of the markets that Flinco and Alberici work in are markets that we are heavily active in. From our corporate services standpoint, we've done stuff internationally as well. We've got stuff in the Philippines and the UK right now.
Yeah, we have some of our team is on calls at time 8 p.m., 2 a.m., especially in some of these international calls on when it comes to our corporate service side.
Wow.
So we're a little bit agnostic on that. There's areas that we'd probably be more comfortable in than others. But, you know, for clients, especially on the corporate service side and the property management side, too, we want to be one-stop shop for key owners and asset managers on property property management and be able to follow them where they go. So we're pretty agnostic geographically.
That's good news for anybody that's listening that has property wherever. We agree. Yeah.
Yeah. We agree too.
I think we're going to call you Mr. Worldwide, Rob. Yeah, I think that's going to be your nickname here.
Yeah. We're talking like, you know, we figure out how to be able to staff and manage buildings in some remote places as well. Some of our clients have some pretty remote facilities that have a hard time getting managed, but we've been pretty successful in being able to make those happen and finding local vendors and service providers to be able to properly service those buildings. We have some partners that we team up with on the facility side as well.
That's great. Sometimes you hear of great properties that open and it's hard to find the staff to work there, or, you know, and it's kind of like, did we do the study to make sure this was the right place to build it?
Yeah,
sure.
That's awesome to hear that that's something we can help with as well. When Rob, you talk a little bit about development services, talk a little bit about the development services we offer and maybe kind of a range of type projects we'd be looking at for that.
Yeah, sure. So on the development side, I'm running a theme here of complexity, right? There's, you know, I hate using the word anyone, that's not correct, but there's many developers that put up, you know, industrial concrete tilt-up buildings, maybe a small strip retail center. I mean, we can do those services, especially for our end clients. We for sure thrive on projects that are more complex. So those are ones that we can help out our customers with entitlement. So that means getting the proper zoning, the zoning in place, you know, tax subsidies. We can help on financing. There's several different components that we can help with there. So on the development side, for sure, we can do build-to-suits for people. That's one of the things that we can do fairly well. We do have... a subset of one of the things that we do is we also do, we have a brand that we focus on the wellness side, which is mostly housing related, where it's more 3 to 4 story housing product. Mm-hmm. That's something that we're rolling out as well, which is very intentional and near and dear to my heart at the same time. On the development side, again, medical, life science, if I dive into a specific project that like we're working on right now, we have a partner out of Chicago that I've been working with for the last 3 to 4 years. They're one of the largest owners of life science buildings in the U.S.
Nice.
And they trust us, right? They could easily go with a much larger company that has been around for, you know, publicly traded 30 to 40 years. That, you know, they trust us based upon the skill sets we have. And so there's a project that they have, just a small case study here. 150,000 square foot life science building. They had a company in there that went public through a SPAC. The company went belly up about 8 months ago. They paid a hefty price for the building. They need to re-tenant the building. We almost look at this from the development side, even though it's an existing structure. So we come in as almost like the fixer. And they're like, help us on this building, right? Now we have a vacant building. That's a pure life science building with a lot of specialized lab. How do we do it? So we come in, we look at the tenants that are in the market, and we're right now, if I fast forward from when this happened, we've now have this building at like 85% leased.
Oh, wow.
We've come in with them not having to spend that much TI to re-tenant the building. And like right now we'll come in and I almost look at that as a turnaround development project.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was this core and shell of a building left with everything, we're coming in and basically turning around that asset for them. So there's a lot of times these end users will call us too and say, we're in trouble. We don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or these institutional clients, how can you create a better yield for us on this building? Because right now we're just stuck. So that's where our kind of coming full circle at the beginning of this conversation, the entrepreneurial part, the strategy part, where we can go in with our clients, say, hey, here's a different thing that we can do to this building to make it perform better. Because a lot of these times, it doesn't matter. A lot of these end clients, at the end of the day, real estate can be used as a place to occupy or an investment for them at the same time. But we come in a lot of times, we're like, how can we make this better for you? So that's, again, another example on the development side. Life science building, we come in, we re-tenant, we turn it back around, and probably about, it took us about 8 months.
Oh, wow. And yes. 85% lease.
Yep. So and it was at zero.
And it was at zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the other stuff we look at, we work with our partners again on whatever their needs may be and try to find creative solutions. So we also have a long time healthcare client partner that we've been working with, and they need a new 100,000 square foot ambulatory facility. They're a very profitable and well-run healthcare company, but their capital planning process isn't allowing them to go ahead and do that at the speed they would want right away. So again, we're working with them to see if we can design, build, operate, and sell. Eventually, they won't own the building at the end of it, so we create a structure where at the end of a certain time frame, they'll be able to buy it back. It'll be theirs. But in the meantime, we'll go up, we'll help them find the land. We will get the land entitled properly. We will get the architect involved to their specifications. Obviously, it's their building and how they want to use it. So they will tell us their needs and we'll work together on the design. And then at some point, we'll go ahead, after that design is kind of set and working together, we'll go ahead and build it. And then they will come and operate the building. And at the end of the time, they will get that building back. And then we're also looking at a number of university like infrastructure and student housing deals. A lot of these universities have a lot of deferred maintenance in their utilities and infrastructure. And that's not a key area where you get a lot of people interested in putting their name on a central utility plant. They like putting their name on the new science building or the new dorm building.
Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff gets put to the wayside and deferred, but it's becoming an issue because it's getting to the point where it needs to be addressed. So there's a fair amount of opportunities out there right now where we're looking at it, where we could come in. We could either team up with a third party and operate it as well, but we could come in and overhaul those plants. And then they just pay us back over a number of years and be able to have full functioning, well-run operating facilities. So those are sort of the things we're looking at. But yeah, it could be anywhere. It could be a corporate client looking for a new headquarters that we could come in and help develop. It could be we had a facility in Denver that we were looking at where they needed a parking garage for their healthcare facility. Same sort of thing. We can get them to market probably a lot quicker and a fair amount cheaper just because we're addressing it from a developer standpoint and a life cycle standpoint rather than having to go through a lot of delays in their capital planning process.
Yeah, the process sounds appealing when you think about when you're talking about the healthcare project. It's like you've got a successful company that's rocking and rolling over here. It's like, who are we going to pull out of that operation to go do the rest of this?
Yeah.
And the fact that you could pick up the phone and call Rob and say, hey, this is something we want to do. And Rob says, okay, cool, let's go with it.
Yeah, right. They have really good facilities, smart people, but they're tapped out too. And they're just looking for extra help. They keep expanding and then their staff doesn't necessarily expand with them. And they got good ideas and know what they're doing, but we can get there and just provide some outsourced resources.
Yeah, and if it's not in your core competency, right? I mean, if you're nose down and you're working and this is not something you regularly do, you're going to be experimenting along the way or calling multiple people, and then you got five different people that are trying to help in one process when it's kind of like, hey, you can just call Rob or you can just call Craig. Right?
I think we allow clients the liberty to, instead of them experimenting in-house, real estate, construction sometimes can be thought of just a commoditized business.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we give clients, it allows them the opportunity to think out of the box, but we can take that risk for them. So if they call us, we have the time to look at solutions for them, right? They might be drinking, their facilities people, construction people, they might be drinking from a fire hose, right? Yeah. And they're just trying to maintain what they have. It allows them to look for different solutions without taking that labor in-house to go look for it at the time. So it's sometimes it's a perfect pairing because we're entrepreneurial, we're out of the box, we're nimble. Yeah. So again, I don't like to look at us as a commodity because we can provide this service to our clients. And then it allows them, they can say, you know what, that still doesn't work, but at least we gave them that alternative to look at other different solutions.
Yeah, I love it. Love that thought. What about when we're talking about complicated projects, I look around Austin, you think about the how many people are not in office buildings anymore, right? How leased or unleased these office buildings are. And for an example, like I've sat in a ULI study when they're talking about, hey, what do you do with an old office building that has a 25,000 square foot plate and it's 20 stories tall? What can we do to get people in here? Because people still want to be working from home.
Got some at least you threw us a hardball there. that's like the billion-dollar question for every institution these days. So what do you do on those buildings? That's where I go back to like Econ 101 class in college. It's a supply and demand issue. I don't think anyone has the silver bullet on those. It doesn't matter what market you're in. You could be in a Nashville, Austin these days, and then going to more of your Rust Belt cities, your Clevelands to St. Louis, Missouri, right? Or it's a tough thing these days to figure it out. A lot of those office buildings have functionally obsolescence to them with their floor plates and where the plumbing stacks are and everything like that. I will tell you, you mentioned ULI, and this is something that was going to be passed in the state of Missouri last year. It's basically tax credits. There was actually in the state of Missouri, and it didn't get passed last year. They're trying to get it passed again this year. But a lot of these downtown office buildings, tax credits to basically rehabilitation credits to be on the forefront of that. And saying, okay, we have a tax subsidy here that will help on these conversions to either go to mixed use, which would be hotel, residential, retail, and a lot of these buildings near and dear to my heart because I'm from St. Louis. We have a lot of buildings sitting in our downtown right now. We have the Railway Exchange Building, which is 1.2 million square feet, AT&T Tower, which is a 1.4 million square feet. They're just sitting vacant collecting tumbleweeds right now. And so the question you asked is, how do these buildings get activated? Those are all the things that we're looking at from a strategy perspective. And how do you reactivate these buildings? Those are the things that I'm thinking about, but that's it. Office is, there was just an article in the Wall Street Journal. We brought this up the other day, is 2 days ago, is that coming back to the office is somewhat plateaued a little bit. So it's, what are you doing with some of these spaces that might not ever be utilized again in that manner? So again, that's when I think it comes down to, not every project's the same, but that's when, if I'm an office building owner, those are some of the ways that we could work with them. What is the strategy over the next 5 to 10 years? If I'm looking for either an exit strategy or how to get this building's yield up, what are some things we can be doing to this building that might not just be the traditional cubicle office space? What else can we be doing in this building in the meantime that might activate it from a revenue perspective? And again, every situation's different.
Yeah, you also see a lot of cyclicality, and we've seen this before, where no one wants office, and who knows, 10 years from now, offices might be taken off again. So every market has its cyclicality. When they get bad, they feel really bad, and you see some of these offices that were under contract for $150 million, 5 years ago, and now someone just bought it for 20.
Yeah,
and they were lucky to sell it. So there is an issue out there. It's going to be about repositioning, being creative. Each of these markets do kind of serve as their own. I mean, real estate doesn't transfer. It's not a national thing. Some markets get hit harder than others. But you look at some of the housing in Miami. When was that? I guess it was like 08, 09. All these buildings looking empty, and you know, how are these units ever going to get absorbed? And then, you know, 5 years later, you wish you would have, I should have known better. I should have bought five units.
Right.
So there is a cyclicality, but yeah, right now, from a commercial office perspective, that's one area that looks pretty dire.
Yeah. And I'd say, and this goes back to buildings, there's the brick and mortar component of a building where it's the commoditized part. And then it's, if I go to work every day, or if I'm going to go live in a place, is that a place I actually want to go to? Right. Mm. So that's one of the things that we put on top of the property management side. And also when we're acting as development services for clients at the same time, is how can we activate these spaces? And coming full circle, talking about kind of the wellness brand that we have on the multifamily side.
Yeah.
Such a big part. I'm a big fan of functional wellness.
Yeah.
So when it comes to people like Rich Roll and Mark Hyman, is how can you apply, and this goes into living longer and healthier, but how can you do that in your built spaces? And a big part of that is community. I've been a part of an innovation community in St. Louis for a while called Cortex, have helped them out since the beginning. And one of the things that has helped that community thrive, a coin term we'd use there called serendipitous collisions, is bringing people in inside locations with community and being able to create places that people can like talk, eat well, get fitness. Like this morning you guys did your stretch and flex, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a perfect example. Bring you guys together. You're all in a room together. It's a communal space. It's a way to connect. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, once you leave in your building, and that doesn't matter if you're like residential leaving for your day to go to work or vice versa, you're going into work, it is actually a place that continues, like that you can meet people, thrive. And then with that, it creates a healthier environment for you long-term as an individual, which I think is a huge deal these days. So I don't think anyone wants to go back to like, I think it was like a 1998 movie, the movie Office Space. Mm-hmm. I think it was 98, 99. No one wants that environment, right? Right.
We put the guy in the basement?
Yeah. So no one wants that environment. Everyone wants the exact opposite, right? And then that's what we try to apply to these buildings that have had these vacancy issues and whatnot. Create a place where people actually want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge difference maker. Huge.
Well, Alberici and Flinko's, you know, we've taken that to heart in our own office space. You know, look at the upgrades we've made in pretty much all of our offices on both sides to make them places where people want to come to work, communal spaces, work together, when people socializing.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I was in a mental resilience training last week with Dr. Sally Spencer Thomas, and Dr. Sally talked about us in the United States being the loneliest culture in the world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people, they just want to come to work. They just want to do their thing. They want to put their head down. They want to work. They want to go home. They want to play on their phone. They want to sit in their house. They, you know, like the whole COVID thing is, you know, when people were stuck in their houses for years, you're right. And we weren't encouraged to go out. And she talked about, you know, how you have to be able to get out of your comfort zone, how you have to be in these spaces where you can talk to people, where you can interact, because it is healthy. Right. That's what humans are made for. We're made for that community. That's what draws us together. That's what keeps us, you know, keeps us going every day.
That's how you grow.
Yeah, it is how you grow.
Outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. And I love the thought of the wellness brand. That's really cool that that's something that's special for you, Rob. I like that a lot. Let's talk a little bit about P3 Ventures, right? That's something as cities and counties are, you know, short on money. They want somebody to come in and help bring the money and build the project. And, you know, do a lease back scenario. How are we looking in that market?
I'll take that one. That's what we keep finding is there's getting to Craig's point in the beginning when we started talking about STEM buildings and whatnot, the P3 stuff at times, mostly heavily infrastructure related.
Mm-hmm.
It's the things that people don't see, right? Mm-hmm. It's the things behind the walls. It's the things that are on the roofs. It's the things that you park in. Those are the things that we find that are somewhat, you know, deferred over time, and people ignore the life cycle of those things sometimes because they think they're just going to go forever. And then they're ignored until this critical point at the end where they're like, oh, shoot, now what do we do? So we find a lot of clients these days are either capital constrained or they don't want to put these ventures on their balance sheet. But at the same time, is they're looking for a construction partner that can be a one-stop shop for these ventures. And that comes down to the alignment again, LCG, Alberisi, Flint Co., that we can provide these services to these end users, where typically it might be Alberisi or Flint Co. building these structures for these universities or institutions. And then they're like, well, that's great. How do we now finance it? How do we get the capital for it? Mm-hmm. Well, now here's the menu again, right? Mm-hmm. We can provide the one-stop shop for you. We can do everything from finance it, build it, give you the keys afterwards. We can operate it afterwards. Essentially, you don't have to worry about it, right? And we can look at different mechanisms how to do that. We consider it's a big growth factor right now because these are huge capital projects at times that generally when you look at the ROI, you can't derive income from them or limited income. Mm-hmm. So it's look at different ways to finance these projects.
It's not only financing too, it's, you know, the creativity in delivering the solution.
Yeah.
So the more people that are looking at it, the better chance you're going to get of getting a unique delivery of something that someone's never thought of before. And, you know, this is how innovation is created, is by creating a little bit of, instead of, you know, your centralized planning where you do everything the same way, you take it outside your comfort zone a little bit, allow some people to approach it, you know, experts in different areas that might be bringing strategies over from, you know, other markets, et cetera. And this is how we approach this over here. What if we took that same approach and put it to this, made it a solution here, and all of a sudden you got something that hasn't been done before in that area that seems to work really well and brings the cost down, brings the life cycle cost down, brings the longevity up. So, you know, anytime you get additional people looking at things is new opportunity to create and deliver a unique solution. So that's a lot what the P3s are doing. And it's also doing, like Rob said, it's solving some capital issues that some of these people have. You know, ultimately someone's got to pay for it somewhere. So yeah, none of this is free. But it's a different way of delivering it. You know, that may be profitable. They have the cash flow to do things, but they might not have the capital to do things, or might not know where to go to get that capital. Or they, you know, they want something creative. They want some unique thought. They want a couple different people to look at it and come up with different concepts. And all of a sudden, you know, wow, I never thought of that. This is could be a really, really cool space. So, you know, P3s, whether it's infrastructure or student housing, or, you know, we're looking at water wastewater plants where they need a new facility. And, you know, what better way to go and have someone else just, you know, figure it all out for you and pay them over time and come up with the best solution. So it's about driving innovation and creativity as well as a clear one-stop shop and source for capital.
Yeah, getting to Craig's point, I think it's, and he hit it, the nail on the head, there's always a better way to do something. Mm-hmm. So always be learning, better way to do things. And so when it comes to these P3s, it's what's the best, better approach? What's an out-of-box approach to approach these, getting to his point, not just financing, and then everyone learns at the same time. And with that, you always then develop a better solution year over year. So in these partnerships, it's a great way to, I'd say, expand that. And then that relates back to there's better ways to approach things from a design perspective, cost perspective, looking at a campus holistically, unless and not just looking at one building or one parking garage. So it provides an opportunity to tackle these solutions that might be in a way that some of these partners might not have looked at it beforehand.
Yeah, so if you're in the camp of this is the way we've always done things.
Yeah.
These are the guys you need to call to be able to help take care of some of the challenges.
Again, we just talked about, it's about getting outside your comfort zone.
Like yeah.
It's going to be, you know, there's going to be challenges along the way, but usually those challenges force you to look at new and creative solutions. So in the end, you know, you got to go through a little pain to make a lot of progress.
Yeah, very cliche, but it goes the phrase being comfortable, being uncomfortable, which is really hard to do and a risk in a lot of these projects where it's, well, how do I dial down my risk? But it's finding that perfect complement of kind of inserting risk and looking at things more from an innovation perspective and then complementing that with being risk adverse. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, talking about risk. A lot of these P3s, what they're set up for, what's really important is the appropriate people taking the appropriate risk. We're comfortable taking different risks than Flinko's willing to take. And we all look at risk, but we know how to, we all have better ability to manage certain parts of risk in a project. So when you create a matrix and define clearly who is taking what risk, that is when you can really bring some cost down, because you're putting it in the people, hands of the people that are experts and comfortable doing certain things.
Great point. Sorry, I was writing that down. Who's taking the risk? No, I like it. So as we talk about this buying the part and piece and investing in LCG, what are we looking like on the horizon as you think about the next 1 year, 5 year, 10 years out? Is there like a grand goal?
We'll let our visionary
provide Mr. Entrepreneur. There,
yeah, we're taking from the snapshot the book, Traction. So when I look at the vision of LCG, it is one to keep building upon having extreme trust with our partners. And I've always been the biggest fan of without relationships, you have nothing, right? You have nothing. So it's really expanding our existing relationship base, being the trusted advisor for our clients. And I'm a huge fan of fiduciary. Mm-hmm. So it's always what's doing what's in the best interest of your clients. We will never sell them something that they do not need. It is always to better enhance what they're currently doing. And so with that, I've also been, this is what I tell my kids, okay? Especially now these days. They're like, hey, what should I do when I grow up? Or maybe I do this. And I'm a huge proponent, do what you love, okay? Mm-hmm. And that translates back to, I'm a big proponent, I love real estate. I always have. It was either real estate or finance for me in college. I'd watch CNBC during the days. I bought my first condo in 1998. So I was in college. So I was like 19, 20 years old. I've just always liked finance, real estate, all the above. I like growing things. I like seeing things being created. I like seeing the reaction from clients if you've done well by them. So it's just always that feel good component. And I'm relating that back to the growth of LCG. If we do well for our clients, we're going to grow. So when it comes to saying, oh, hey, I want to add 100 people or 150 people, that's not necessarily the objective, but it is scaling and growing with our clients, being that resource for them. And so, and then everything else will follow from there. So 5 to 10 years out, we want to have a sizable corporate service department. We're already on that way to keep growing that. We want to keep growing our services across the US, and we want to have good people join us at the same time. We've just made excellent key hires in several divisions that we have, and we're super excited for them. And do I think candidly that we could have hired those people without the Alberisi partnership and the reputation? Maybe, maybe not, but mm-hmm. I think it's what helped us seal the deal in many ways as well with hiring these key people, which was huge for us. So with that, we'll be bigger 5 to 10 years from now from a personnel perspective. We'll be doing bigger projects than we do today. But again, the thing that's the most important part for me is always having our clients say, yes, LCG helped us and we couldn't have done it without them. And at the same time, I want to say the same thing about those clients. We couldn't have done it without them at the same time. And they want to continue to grow on size and scope on who we work with at the same time.
Great answer. Craig, how does that align?
I tried on that one.
Yeah, really did. You knocked it out of the park. Craig, how does that align with what Alberisi is?
I mean, that's been Alberisi's philosophy too. You get the right people, you put them in the right position, you become a trusted advisor and to your clients, and all the rest of it takes care of itself. I mean, we do have to worry about the small things because, you know, that's, we can't be inefficient and stupid and everything else. But ultimately, if you can provide value to your clients and you do it in a respectful and thoughtful manner, you don't try to sell them things they don't need. But whenever someone needs something or has a problem, you're there to help them through it. And then you got, you know, as he said, really excited about the hires that we made because we got some really younger and talented folks that have a lot of runway, a lot of great attitude, very smart. And when you put those people in, you give them the resources behind it, they can just take off. And we're fortunate now that we have a blank canvas to paint from. We're not inundated with some old technology and solutions. We're able to create that as we go. And we're, you know, if we get into something and we find we chose a platform that we might not like, we're like, let's change it now. Because I don't want to get here 10 years from now and be stuck with this platform that You know, 10 years ago, when it was easy to make the change, easier, it's never easy to make any change. But when it's easier to make the change and set us in the right direction, I'd rather rip that Band-Aid off right now than in the future. So it's been a really good match. As he's talked about earlier, Alberisi's influence has been outstanding, extremely helpful. Flinko and Alberisi, they keep asking us, what can we do to help? Helped a lot in the marketing side, for example, and just provided some great access to some of their trusted clients. So I really look forward to what the next couple of years will bring.
So if you're looking for a group that's gonna build you some trust, that has the best interest of the client in mind, that is interested in growing with clients, that provides value, a group that wants to do the little things to make sure the big things go well, this is the group to talk to.
We think so too.
I mean, yeah, put it that way.
110%.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts?
I mean, mine, I just really enjoyed the opportunity to talk with you today and get kind of our vision and what we're doing out there. I think there's a lot of kind of unknown. What is LCG doing and what does it mean for us? Again, we're here just to try to provide additional services to clients that may have needs. We can do as much or as little as those clients need. As we said, if they don't need a service, if they got, you know, experts in-house, great. You know, we will still partner up with them in other ways. But just really happy to be able to kind of express what we're doing. It's been a great 3 months so far that I've been in the COO role with Rob. Very, very excited about the trajectory of both the Alberisi Enterprise and LCG.
Yeah, I'd just close and say, like, I love this. I love the business. I love that I get to work with Craig again. I mean, it's like, again, you never know what happens in life, how things come together. I think our runway is immense. I think what we can provide clients is something that they might not have had beforehand. You know, for me, I look at this business, some of my closest friends now are clients. I play tennis with one of our great clients every weekend. Another client of ours that we do these high rocks races together. I mean, it's exciting. And I'm looking forward to this. And this partnership with Alberisi is just another injection into the company. And I'm looking forward, looking back like 5 years from now. You asked about that. What does this look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I get pumped and excited to see what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think it's like we're motivated. We're pumped about what we're going to be doing. So I'm excited. Those are my final thoughts.
That's awesome. Well, Rob, I'm glad to have you on the team now. Glad to have you part of the Alberisi team. Craig, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
I've never met anyone with the name Dano before. So that's another feather in the cap on this podcast.
There you go. Don't forget it. Thanks a lot for coming in today, guys. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks.